Welcome to Marketers Talking Marketing.
Welcome to Marketers Talking. Today we have our first two guests in one episode situation. It's like a weirdest intro ever, but super excited to chat with Melissa and Leslie from your respective companies and Wednesday Women. Tell the audience a little bit about yourselves and what you're doing.
I will go first because I'm seeing the point from Melissa, my co-founder, and I follow all directions by Melissa, my co-founder. So I am Leslie Greenwood. I have two businesses. So one of the ones we're going to talk about a little bit more today is Wednesday Women, which I'm sure we'll get into the origin story at some point. Exists to highlight executive women and get them on more stages, podcasts, in more feeds, and just generally more visibility. My main business, I call that one my accidental business. My main business is community strategy consulting. So I work with both SaaS companies and paid membership communities to either revamp, start from scratch, or re-strategize their communities.
Awesome.
Yeah. And hey, I'm Melissa Moody. I am Leslie's co-founder. That is my most important title, besides mom, of course. And I have a tendency to also create accidental businesses, as Leslie will tell you. But between my last roles, Leslie and I really ramped up Wednesday Women, which we're so proud of the way it's been growing. I also host a podcast called Two Pizza Marketers for small team marketers, for marketers on small teams. And then my day job that I took starting at the beginning of this year and I'm loving is my title is general manager for Matcha, which is a Comscore brand. It's a software that is deep into supporting people's ability to connect one-on-one and human-to-human in what has become a very automated, unpersonalized business world. So we're building some really cool products. And I traditionally have been a marketer for 20 years, but now I'm kind of in the role that sits across marketing, product, engineering, all of it. So yeah, glad to be here.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun too, to kind of be able to expand that focus and go beyond just marketing. I'm sure every marketer listening has had moments where they're asking product what they're doing, where they're like, if I could only change this. So the big common thread, and I haven't really shared it directly with the audience, a lot of guests know, but my big inspiration to start Marketers Talking was when I was sitting at a marketing conference and saw the same, I'm just going to say bald white guy, the same one that I've seen at many conferences. And I look and I say, hey, I know so many women who have done what he's done 5 or 6 times that aren't up there talking. He's done it twice. Mm-hmm. Like, and not to discredit what he's done, doing great work, but there's also women who are doing amazing things that just do not have the platform or access to the platform. And I'm sure we've all been the only woman in the room many times. And it's just so frustrating to not see more women faces on stage talking at these conferences. And in my frustration, I said to myself, stop complaining, do something. So I launched Marketers Talking, where like a majority of our guests are women. And it's not a podcast for women to talk about being women in marketing, though that is a common thread because we're all women in marketing. but you know, to talk about marketing and just have these great marketers have more opportunity to share their thoughts and experiences. So that is like our common thread that we saw leading to this. And as that is a jumping off point, why don't you tell the audience about why you guys started Wednesday Women?
Yeah, I can start a little bit. I'll start the beginning part of it, which is Wednesday Women actually began as a single post. So probably a year and a half ago, I made a post that said, hey, who are the women CEOs and founders? I don't remember exact question, but it was either a CEO or founder that I should be following because my feed is desolate. So how do I get more people? And that just, you know, I didn't have very big following at that time. And so it was like, it just piled on. It was like it's still one of my best posts ever. And so I'm like, okay, now what am I going to do with this? I'm like, well, I'll scrape it. I'll get these names and I will start putting them on a Google sheet. Well, I did 3. And if you understand dispersonalities, I'm a high D. And that happened last for like 2 seconds. And then I went straight to Fiverr and found someone to do it for me. And so that was the beginning, and it turned into a very fancy and official Google Sheet, which then once I got enough people, I started sharing the Google Sheet around. So people like, you all see those posts. who are the women marketers I should follow? Who are the women influencers I should follow? And so I just started dropping my sheet around. I'm like, oh, here you go. Here's 100, or here's 50, or at one point it was here's 200. And fatefully, I dropped it in Melissa's feed because she'd ask a very similar question. And I knew who she was. We'd never really talked before. And so that was the beginning of our relationship. And I'll stop there and let Melissa pick up the story.
Yeah. Well, similarly to what you went through, Jess, we got together. We said, hey, let's chat for 30 minutes. I was thrilled when I saw this great spreadsheet. We shared our stories, got to know each other a bit, very serendipitous. And within that half hour, we were about to say goodbye. And we thought, you know, we should do something, like you said, like just a little something. Is there one small thing that we can do? Not nearly as big as starting a podcast. And what we decided we would do is every Wednesday, we would take one awesome woman and just feature her, like nothing but celebrating someone awesome that other people should hear about. We called it Wednesday Women. At some point, we picked up a URL. We started posting once a week and people ate it up. People wanted more. And so very slowly, this is why Leslie calls it the accidental business. This little, what we call the ripple, like starting this little motion kind of swelled and swelled and swelled. And, you know, within half a year, we've got almost 5,000 followers. We've got people wanting to come to events. We held our first event in January. We're taking that spreadsheet and we're turning it into a self-serve directory that people will be able to access online. We've got merch. So like, it's so funny because the momentum of what we're doing obviously struck a chord. You had seen it. We had seen it. I'm sure hundreds of other women had seen it. And we can talk about like why it is and why it's so important. But I will maybe start by saying, I think two of the things that really define us is one, it's about positivity. It's not about, like, we all know how busted the system is. Leslie and I aren't out to fix the entire system. We just want to show how many awesome kick-ass women are out there doing amazing things. We just want to blast the examples of awesome because we felt that that's what was missing. Like you said, it's not that the women aren't doing it. It's that we can't see them. So a lot of, I think, of what has been positive for us has been like really like a positive swell. Like, and it's, we want men to follow it. We want it to be accessible to everyone. We're getting out there. And I think that's the second piece, which is, although it's very focused on women, we're not building something just for women. Our mission is for everybody to see more of these examples. And so it's very different than a lot of kind of groups you might've seen before. And actually what's nice is it's very complimentary. Like, we're great partners with Women in Revenue, Women in CS, and, you know, all these groups, we can complement each other. It's not just another kind of option for women that are out there. So.
Yeah. I like that approach you're taking where it's not just for women, but you're thinking about how do we just elevate women in the entire ecosystem. Mm-hmm. That coming up as a woman in STEM, that was always my biggest gripe with some of the organizations was like, well, I'm the only woman in a 300-person engineering class. Yeah, like this is a great resource for me, but I know there's other students who could also benefit. So how do we just make everyone rise together, ensuring that there's more women seats there, or not seats, but more women faces in the audience versus just being a resource for women. So I like that. And it feels that you mentioned before when we were talking ahead of the show that you're really building community, not a community. I'd love to hear more about that because it does feel like you guys have an innovative approach to how you're fostering this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I add one thing to go back just a little bit? Melissa tells a story in slightly a different way than I tell the story because I believe that she had bought the domain, named the company before our first meeting. And then once we got on, I'm like, can I buy a HubSpot? And she's like, oh, I don't think we need that yet. I'm like, well, I saw WednesdayWomen.co was available. She's like, oh, I already bought WednesdayWomen.org. I'm like, you are my kind of girl. Like, we are doers. And that is the one thing I think also is like, we're just, like you said, what you want to do. It's like, let's just do. And so anyway, just a little bit about our dynamics is just like, we're both super doers and she doesn't give herself enough credit to like, she'd already come up with all this crap before we even had our first call. I mean, it's just crazy.
Sometimes, you know, you have it, it's kind of floating around and you're just missing like a piece or two, but you have stuff started. I mean, I definitely got domains from the 2010s that I've started using recently. So
I think there's definitely a subculture of us domain hoarders that are like, I'm just gonna pick that up. I had a bunch renew like last week that I was like, oh yeah, I'll start that business someday.
You might need it, but I'll tell you, I needed a domain for something the other day And I went into my GoDaddy and I just picked a random domain and I was glad I had it. I didn't have to buy anything. I mean, I also did pick up a couple more domains that were look good because you never know. You know?
Never know.
Yeah, so, you never know. You need a
foreign.
Can we do another whole episode on the downfall of Google domains, please? Because that is my shame. Anyway.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's a whole. It's a whole.
You asked us about the building community versus building a community. And yeah. I love that you put it that way because we did a presentation a few weeks ago with like, that's how we titled it. But it's especially interesting to me because Leslie is like, as you know, from marketing perspective, you're on the marketer show. Like I have kind of a broader generalist with some background, but Leslie's like deep, like the T for Leslie is community. And she is a master builder of communities and has helped many brands do that. So I think it'd be really cool, Leslie, to hear from your perspective. I mean, kind of you build a community for people. That's what you do. So how have you seen that difference between like building community and a community? Because it's really, it's odd that we discovered this.
It's very odd. And I'm pretty sure that I made a post a year ago saying, you know, people say they have a community. Because in general, when you say community, it's like saying Kleenex. Mm-hmm. But really Kleenex are tissues. And there are very plush tissues and there are some scratchy crap that you would never want to touch your face. And that's the way community is. And then you use them for different things, you know? And so community is kind of like this catch-all name. So I'll have conversations with people and they're talking about building a community, but they're talking about building an audience mm-hmm. or they're talking about building followers, but they're not talking about building a community the way that I was thinking about it. And so I'm sure I made a post, like I said, poo-pooing people saying they're building a community, but they're really just building like followers mm-hmm. or an audience or something, a Slack group or something. And so like, I totally would have poo-pooed this idea. So the fact that like we've come together and found that this is actually a phenomenon is kind of crazy. It's very odd coming out of my mouth. What we've kind of decided, and it's really, I don't know that it just smacked us in the face one day. And that's what I think it was, especially after our event mm-hmm. when people are like, oh, I belong to the Wednesday Women community, or they'll tag their friends and post and say, join Wednesday Women. You should join Wednesday Women. You should follow Wednesday Women. I'm part of their community. And it's like, oh, or at the event, someone said, I'm going to be the chapter head of Wednesday Women in San Francisco. And I'm like, dude, we don't even have a newsletter yet.
We don't have a membership. We don't have a Slack group. We don't have a circle. We don't have, there's no like thing to join. There's nothing to be a member of at this point, just to be clear.
So the community isn't like, there's not like a login portal. It's not like an actual like established physical thing that you show up to and you know, sign a membership into.
No. Yeah. But one of the biggest principles, and Melissa's been posting about that this week, and we can certainly add more detail, is that, you know, one of the things is once people start naming themselves, so they've named themselves and claimed that they're part of our community. Mm-hmm. And it's like, once we started hearing that, we're like, okay, then if the people call themselves part of the community, then we have a community, point blank. And I've been using it a little bit more in our wording. It's like the Wednesday Women community, although, again, we still have to explain to people that we're actually not a community.
That's the ongoing problem with marketing though, right? Is like the nuance of these terms, like Leslie explained about community so perfectly. Like, what is it? Well, it's very different than like a pavilion community, right? Like it's completely different than what you might think of as community. So that's tricky. I also think the other thing that's really relevant to marketers, especially, is part of the reason we didn't set out to build a thing that they have to belong to and pay to is none of us has time. And that might even be like one of the core drivers behind why we don't see the women on stages and on things is we don't have, nobody has time to join another thing they have to show up at and slog away at to participate in. And so like, if we think about just that absolute negative amount on our balance sheet that all of us are running right now for time, we weren't going to build another something that would just steal more of these busy women's time. Like they've got shit to do.
Yeah, that is such, it resonates so much. I'm a little background. I'm a first time parent to a 14-year-old. My partner and I adopted his niece and going from being kind of solo and just us for a long time to having like a full child who has school activities 3 days a week. And we can't just make dinner and walk away. Like we have to like engage and spend time planning and now talking about like high school planning and courses, I don't know how people are parents and do anything else. It's exhausting. And so, yeah, that on top of working, on top of wanting to go and create, you know, submissions for CFPs and CFSs and all that. Yeah, like it's exhausting. Like no one has time for that. And I find it interesting because it really sounds like the community came out of people who are following, who are fans, who are engaging, who almost self-organized and said, we are the community and opting into it, versus some organizations or groups where they say, we're going to launch a community, come sign up, here's everything gated so we can quantify and have metrics on everything. And it feels very organic the way that it came about.
100%. And I think it's interesting when I look now at the skill set that both Melissa and I bring to this. So like the name of my community building business is Chief Evangelist Consulting. What I focus on is building the interaction with the humans that the company deals with in a way that makes them want to go out and talk about it, you know, on their own, you know, to drive business through that old time word of mouth, but you've earned it and you put a strategy behind it. And then I look at what Melissa built at Gated and the like raving fans of Gated and the sadness when Gated closed down and they never had a community, but they had a community around them. So it felt very similar. So that particular skill set that both she and I bring to that is definitely something that we have utilized. Like we have raving fans, we have evangelists, we have people talking about us, and we don't ask them to do that. Yeah. We love it though.
And there are some secrets. I mean, Leslie has, like, we've shared them, and Leslie's brought so many of them from like the traditional kind of community skill set that she has into this kind of fuzzier version that we're working on. But like, you know, you mentioned kind of turning into raving fans. You have to build around a very, very clear mission or core or whatever it is. It doesn't need to be world changing, but it has to be something that people, and I'm working on this in my day job right now because we're building a product that people just want to be a part of, even if they didn't know what you were selling. And that's what we've built with Women, which is people want to be in the orbit because they like the mission. They're not saying I need this or I want this or I deserve this. They just kind of want to be in the orbit. And it's not easy to do, but when you can do it, it becomes a crazy powerful tool. I would actually posit that it's more doable than people think it is. I think even if you're selling some boring ass fintech, like whatever, I mean, marketers can create a reason, and it may be a very niche audience, right? Like that's the, you probably have a smaller size audience, but you find that reason why people want to be in your orbit, even if, you know, the features they want is 10 months down the road. Like that is super powerful. So that's one thing. The other thing that you mentioned is that self-identify. There's something to be said for giving them something they can identify with that's not like the business, right? And that's what I did with my last startup and that Leslie mentioned, Gated. And that's very much what I'm building with my current one, is this idea that like, you want to be the person who uses that tool, or you want to be the person who's part of Wednesday Women. And it's not even necessarily about product yet. It's like that first step of just perceived value. Not easy, but like when you start getting little hints of it, like people saying, yeah, like I'm a Wednesday Women or I'm a member of Wednesday Women. And we're like, oh my God, there is no membership. That's it's so cool when you start to sniff that people are self-identifying. I think that's a really important milestone. If you're a marketer and you get that, like have a party, because there's nothing good to play with.
The only thing I can think of is a similar comparison is like someone who's like a Swiftie or in the Beehive, where they've like identified into this community. K-pop fans, right, are diehard. But that's what my brain keeps going to in this case too.
And if we go into like the, let's call it, drier world of B2B, you know, sometimes it's around certain products too. Like I think the people that use Gong, like love Gong. They're like raving fans of Gong, right? And I'm not saying they're going to go wear a t-shirt necessarily. But there are some, I mean, I would say, like, I know you worked at Metadata. There were people that were like very like associated with, and I think like, if a company has a strong event, like, or like a podcast, I used to like, I would associate myself with Demand You because I listened to that podcast and I felt like I was a part of it. You don't have to do it the same way. Like an event can be that thread. Like I always go to .. Right. The people that always go to Saster, like it's part of their being, right? Like that's a small taste of that. I'll stop. But you get it. Like if you self-identify with something, you don't have to be like, you know, again, wearing their sneakers or something, but like you can see it and you can see people talking about it and you can see those threads.
Yeah. I think metadata is actually a really good example too, because metadata was taking a different approach to the problems they solve than other platforms would. So if you use metadata, you're more likely to be a revenue-focused marketer who cares about tying your campaigns back to pipeline. And that is like a very specific subset. And I was prior to working at metadata, I was a metadata fan, even though I hadn't used the platform yet. I was a fan of them before I used the platform because I was a revenue-focused marketer.
There and I was go. Like, you were identifying, you were self-identifying into that set. And it doesn't have to be super sexy like a Swiftie or a Beehive, but that's the vibe for sure. Like I'm that kind of a person. It doesn't matter how I use the product, or maybe I stopped using the product, but I'm that kind of a person.
I would add one quick thing to that. Like the easiest thing that, you know, your listeners, marketers, customer success people, even salespeople, and the basis of this is deliver an experience, product or service beyond expectation. If you expect X and I give you Y and Z, automatically you're like, oh, you know, especially in this low customer service world. For example, one of the things that we did when I was at Pavilion is we called for a long time, and during a high growth phase, I don't know why I decided to do this, but it was very good. But we called every new member within 4 business hours of joining. Like you joined, and if, you know, we were on the phone, just, hey, I wanted to just welcome you to the community. I saw you came in, you know, love to point you in any directions, you know, hit me up on Slack if you have any questions. No one expects that. No one expects an enterprise level service at a $2,000 product. And see, that's, I think, one of the things like Melissa and I have done at Wednesday Women is like our event exceeded all expectations. They don't expect that we're not going to ask anything of them in return. And so those kinds of things, and any company can do that. You just provide that extra something. And that's the building block of this entire strategy that we're talking about.
Yeah. And I imagine a lot of those to deliver above expectation isn't a massive lift on your end necessarily.
It's usually the thing that doesn't fail, right? Like do one or two of them. It's not even, you have to do the special thing for everyone. It's you do it once or twice in the right place and it starts bringing that feeling.
It's
a ripple.
I love that.
Leslie's saying the ripple, which another accidental thing we created, but this idea of you do the small thing and it can create huge amounts of waves.
You call to welcome someone, they know someone else who could be a referral. Question for you. So keep talking about the community. People are self-selecting. It feels like that would be hard to quantify. Can you have a community without having the boundaries to be able to define and quantify how large the community is or what the community looks like? Can community be kind of this nebulous, amorphous thing that just exists?
I mean, I would say number one is if your boss isn't demanding that, you can absolutely build that. But if we want to be responsible marketers, like if we were approaching this from a real marketing standpoint and doing it on behalf of an initiative or a company or something, or, you know, Leslie and I have some partners that we work with and we want to quantify it for them. I would say it comes not in the traditional, I asked them to do this, they did this behavior measurement, but it comes in that impact measurement. So when we put a post out there, not just like impressions, but like, what is the reaction? So we're getting this swell, like it gets in front of these type of people. This is the react, like even screenshotting what people are saying, like showing that affiliation. It also comes in when we do want to take an action, like when we have an event, what is the response? Do we get way more people responding? So maybe not in an ongoing measurement, but in a measurement of specific outcomes. So like, let's say if you were building this for a company, you wouldn't measure the community on an ongoing basis. You'd say, we're having an event in September. Is it much easier to get those seats filled, right? Mm-hmm. Or is it much easier to get the speakers that we want? Or you're saying, we've got a launch campaign coming up. Oh my gosh, we all of a sudden have more channels, or we have more advocates that we didn't have before who are now posting our behalf. Like I don't think it's about the number of people, or because you can say you've got 300,000 people in a Slack group, like, or maybe that's not a Slack, but I've heard event people tell me we've got 300,000 people. Well, those are just people that are getting their emails. They have no idea if they're engaged or care. What really matters is when you send out that, hey, we're having an event, do those 300,000 people jump to book seats, right? So less like based on the traditional, like we have this many members, more based on if we put something out there that we actually need action on, do people take it? Okay, that's my rant. Leslie, correct me.
No. I agree on all that. I would say if someone hired me to put an evangelist strategy in place, the things that we would benchmark first are referrals. Like how many referrals are you getting? Because if you've created a bunch of evangelists, you should be getting more organic referrals. Mm-hmm. And then social mentions, which mm-hmm. I guess there's not a great way to measure that. I've just basically counted on a couple of my clients, but it's like, you know, in the course of X amount of time, how many people that are not employees are mentioning you outside on their own without you asking? I mean, think of all the free impressions. I mean, I did that for one company. It was 51, very new company, 51 social mentions in the course of the previous 30 days from non-company employees. Average that they get maybe, I mean, even, you know, 400 impressions or something. It's like, what does 20,000 impressions usually cost you? I mean, I don't know the answer to that. I'm not a marketer. And then there's a scale of like, okay, so your company put out and you got 20,000 impressions, or 50 raving fans went out and created impressions. I would guarantee you that those 50 raving fans have a bigger impact than your company post.
Oh yeah. You'd be hard pressed to find a business owner who, if you ask them, if I have 10 raving fans talking about you a month, would that impact your business? 100% yes. Like that, even if it's one deal, right? It's going to impact.
Can I drop a little plug that's slightly tangential? So yeah. When I was at my last company, we built an internal tool to do this for ourselves. And we are not marketing. My CTO, after we left that, he built it into a full tool. So like there is a tool where essentially you can take all those raving fans and then the marketer serves up the right conversation. Like if you see someone talking about a CEO who has a need for your business, instead of you showing up, all of your raving fans can jump on it. We actually like built that tool.
Okay.
I am no longer running it because I'm like fully onto Matcha right now, but my CTO built it and it's a very cool tool, but just in the sense of that's exactly right. Like the ability to supercharge your fans and what they're mm-hmm. saying about your business is super, super powerful.
Yeah.
And you get points and I'm trying to win.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called Nuttree, just to plug it. Go to Nuttree. It's Nuttr.ee. But
yeah. It's a market. That sounds like they're building something that's definitely solving a market failure, because there's companies that do that manually, yeah. where they'll find those conversations and they'll send them to someone who's like an advisor or friendly and say, can you jump in here with
that's
it?
What we did at Gated, and that's why I built the tool. I mean, that's exactly right. Or they're sending 50 DMs, right? Like I'm going to send everybody an individual DM going, can you go do this thing? Can you go do this thing? Yeah. Or everybody's favorite, the dead Slack group, right?
Yes.
You have a Slack group where you're telling everybody to go post and everybody's like, oh, I didn't see it until 2 weeks later.
Like, oh, missed it. Yeah. We'll include the URL in the show notes below, because that definitely sounds like an interesting tool to check out. Always a fan of tools over here. I recently found one, Riz Farm, that makes me feel so old in using the word Riz on anything, because that's a thing that I've learned kids say. Mm-hmm. But essentially would monitor those conversations and find spots to be able to organically jump in and to provide a Riz. But I hate rizzing. It just feels so weird.
It's like a little too Gen Z. I think the thing is, like, most of us that are running those campaigns are like, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. When we're going to like put a report together for my CEO and all the rizzing I've done, like, it just feels feels very ridiculous. You know,
I haven't quite figured out their ICP and brand voice yet.
Yeah. But I tell you, that domain was probably readily available.
Not anymore, though. Everybody's talking about Riz now, but yes.
Yeah. So if people want to learn more, where's the best spot for them to go? about Wednesday Women Riz Farm.
WednesdayWomen.org is the website. So everything we have is on the website, WednesdayWomen.org. There's a lot of really neat things rolling out there. But, you know, we started and our main social presence is on LinkedIn. So follow Wednesday Women on LinkedIn. That's where you're going to see our core offering from the very beginning, which is every week we feature two extraordinary executive women that you need to add to your feeds. So just do it. Small thing.
Love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. All links will be in the show notes below. Definitely encourage everyone to go connect on LinkedIn, follow, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you so much for having us.
Bam, bam.